Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh,
you're in the madhouse now.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and we are with a really cool guest today. He's fresh from the battlefield of war. Singing all night long. We're with Tyson Leslie, who's a guitar player and keyboardist for Vixen, and he's got a really good, interesting career behind him and a number of side hustles. Tyson got his first guitar by actually winning a talent contest playing piano. He bought an Orpheum Gibson SG copy, red, from a pawn shop for $100, and he still has it. His second guitar was an Ibanez RG550, and he's hugely influenced by guitarists like Paul Gilbert, Steve Vai, Joe Satriani, and Alex Skolnick, who I interviewed in episode 196, along with some other shredder guitars. Here's some of the bands that Tyson's played with. From 2003 to 2008, he was with Pomeroy. He was the keyboardist and rhythm guitarist. They sold over 11,000 albums. He also performed overseas in the military in the Middle East between 2006 and 2008. That was with Banshee playing bass guitar. From 2009 to 2010, he was playing with Corey Taylor from Slipknot and Stone Sour. 2010 to 2015, he was at Howl at the Moon Dueling Piano Bar. He didn't have a particular band gig at the time, so he joined the ranks of the Dueling Piano Players and learned the craft, which he still does today in Nashville for the Big Bang Dueling Pianos on Broadway as a side hustle. 2015, he played with 90s country superstar Tracy Lawrence. Again, he was playing keyboards. He played basically a handful of really cool shows with him, but then he candidly discovered that, you know, that wasn't his strong suit, playing country music. Still has a great relationship with several of the members of his band, and two of the band members he performed on. Two of his band members performed on a country album Tyson just produced that will be released later this year, and we'll talk about that. 2016, he started, and he's currently still playing with The Big Rock Show, and he's playing keyboards and guitar. That's an arena rock cover band that's best known for having residencies on the Kid Rock Cruise, the Kiss Cruise, and various other special events. And the band plays the hits that are not as overplayed from the big arena rock bands like Kiss, Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, Whitesnake. And since 2017, he's been with Vixen, primarily playing keyboards. In February, he, along with guitarist Britt Lightning, flew down to Florida to the bassist's house to audition with her and the new drummer Roxy Petrucci. They played through a short set of their most popular material, and the next day they were informed they got the gig. They played their first show with Vixen in March in Toledo, Ohio, opening up for Cheap Trick, Quiet Riot, Warrant, Cinderella's Tom Kiefer, amongst others, and they've been touring ever since, and they recently performed on the Monsters of Rock cruise with over 30 amazing 80s era hair metal bands. And again, he's now just finished up an album by soul country artist Dew Pendleton. That's D-E-W Pendleton, to be released in the next couple of months. And again, we'll talk about that. He's also done some clinics with some great freaking people. He played with Carmine Appice. He played with Paul Gilbert, and he played with George Lynch. With Carmine, Tyson played keyboards, and with Paul Gilbert and George Lynch, Tyson played bass. He's also released seven independent albums on his website at TysonLeslie.com, and I think you could buy all seven of them for like $12. I would encourage you to go check that out. Again, it's Tyson Leslie, TysonLeslie. He's got some really cool stuff on there. And on Dew Pendleton's album, he produced the album. He played keys and guitar on it, as well as some backup vocals and a couple of co-writes. He's also working on an all-piano pop-rock album called 88 that'll be released soon along the lines of artists like Billy Joel and Ben Folds and other piano-based artists. And he's also putting out an acoustic EP later in this year. He's going to be on Vixen's live album that's going to be released later this year. And that album was mixed and produced by legendary producer Michael Wagner, who's produced Metallica, Skid Row, Dokken, Motley Crue, and other bands in that genre. And finally, the seventh installment of his show called Rare Hair, which is a huge hair, H-A-R-E, is a huge gathering of touring, recording, and working musicians all come together to perform and celebrate metal music of the 80s and 90s. They usually focus on the hair band stuff, but once in a while they take on thrash and speed metal as well. So they'll be doing that this summer. Is that going to be touring all around or primarily in Nashville?
No, it's just in Nashville. It's okay. A venue.
And I will also tell you, Tyson is known and liked by, like, everybody in Nashville. I've heard, like, everybody has just said, oh, Tyson's such a cool guy. So there you go, man. Thank you for coming, man. I know your voice is shot, so I will be gentle. Hey, it's very rare to find someone that's an expert in one thing, but you're an expert in three different instruments, and you've been paid to play guitar, bass, and keys, and I was curious, how did that come about?
Well, as far as keyboard playing, that's, I guess, what I'm known for the most. And then, like, to do some of the bass playing gigs, I played bass in a band for 6 years and really kind of learned the craft of bass playing and kind of how to play bass guitar, not like a guitar player playing a bass guitar. And and we did everything from playing like Les Claypool to Billy Sheehan to a lot of R&B and rap bass lines at the time, country bass lines. I had to learn a lot of different styles, and to be that well rounded, it kind of put me in the forefront of bass players in Kansas City at the time. And so I got hired on. Just people started to get to know me as a bass player in that town. And so when those clinics came along, I got hired to do that. And then there was a band called Banshee that we did that was really popular in Kansas City in like the late 80s.
I actually remember them. I don't know why, but I know them for some reason. Did they have like a hit or like a...
They had a minor hit.
Yeah.
But they were one of the few bands to actually make it out of Kansas City and get a record deal and have a song in the, on MTV and all that kind of stuff. And so when their bass player wasn't able to do it for whatever reason, I don't even actually know, they called me and asked me to play, and it was awesome. We played the Rocklahoma 2008 show, but then those guys didn't get along very well. So, that was it. That was the only show we did. And then that was it. They kind of went back to being defunct again for a while. But, those are definitely my two strongest instruments and the two instruments I like playing the most and feel most comfortable on.
And guitar, how did you start picking that up? Usually you go from, like you said, guitar to bass.
Yeah. I mean, I started on guitar. I got, I won my first guitar when I was around 12 years old or so. And one of the first songs I learned how to play was the opening lick to My Michelle by Guns N' Roses, which is an extremely inappropriate song for a 12-year-old.
That is funny.
I taught myself guitar just because, at the time, in 86, 87, 88, guitar was really prominent on TV, and MTV was still a thing. They were still playing videos. A lot of guitar playing was highlighted, through Shredder-style guitar players and that type of thing. So, obviously, most at the time, a lot of kids wanted to be guitar players, including myself. And sat around just with guitar magazines like everybody else, Guitar for Practicing Musician and those kinds of magazines, and learned by myself and figured out kind of how to play. And definitely having that piano background helped become a guitar player faster, a decent guitar player faster anyway, I think. And for a long time, I just focused on that instrument. Mainly throughout my whole teenage years, I just play guitar. I didn't play piano or keys in the band. I stopped taking piano lessons. And you know, wanted to be a rock star like everybody else. So,
do you shred? Are you a shredder? Because like that's the guys that influence
you. I'm not a good one. Like I've got, I think my biggest, some of my biggest musical regrets in regards to both piano and guitar is at a certain point I stopped learning. I mean, I always learn, but I stopped like practicing learning, if that makes sense. So I stopped kind of working on scales or working on licks. And instead, especially as a working musician, so much of my time is just learning songs, learning other people's songs, rhythm parts and or keyboard parts or whatever. And so I feel like as a shredder, all of my shredder tricks are still the same tricks that I was playing when I was 18, 19 years old. Mm. So I've got licks that make me sound like I'm a better player than I am. But when it comes to being like a creative shredding player, I wish that I was definitely more educated in school than I am. But I can hang. I just don't feel comfortable playing after guys like Chris Nix and some of these other like great guitar players that we have in our town. And it's just like, yeah, no, leave the cool, actual, real guitar playing to those people. And I'll sit back here and hang on rhythm. Because I'm definitely a very decent rhythm guitar player. I grew up with the Ramones and early Metallica, and so my right hand is pretty quick. And I can play all those brass riffs and all those kinds of things with little I don't have trouble playing any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
It comes pretty naturally to me. Down, like the fast downstroking and all that kind of stuff, no problem. But you know, I can't sweep pick or do any of that fancy shit. I'm just like I said, I've got my tools and my tricks, and I'm good with those.
You mentioned Chris, that he's a phenomenal. I mean, you know, he's like a Jeff Beck style player. That guy, you know, he's a tremendous player.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, for each one of these artists, if you can talk about how you got the gig and the nature of the engagement, and if you have any cool stories about working with them. And, man, let's talk about Carmine Appice, one of my, you know, drumming heroes, sort of.
Yeah, Carmine, I don't even remember. I was teaching at a music store, and it's the music store that he was doing a clinic, and he did his clinics there pretty frequently, and it was just one of the guys from the store said, "Hey, Carmine's coming, and we need a keyboard player to play on these songs." So, and I think it was pretty much the same deal both times. And so I had to learn three songs. You know, they're pretty simple. We did like, I'm trying to remember, we did a song called V8, which is just this fast kind of Hot for Teacher type of like thing, and it's a really fun song. And then we always did The Ocean by Zeppelin.
Yeah,
but he always just kind of, we just did the riff and he just kind of do his drum stuff over that, and right. That was pretty fun. And it's always cool to be there for those, not only just because it's Carmine and I love Rod Stewart and all that stuff that, and Vanilla Fudge and whatever that he's done, but also just to listen to him talk about his craft and, you know, and all the experiences he's had. And a lot of the drummer friends that I have and people that we know say nobody's a bigger fan of Carmine than Carmine. But, you know, and he does repeat stories and stuff. But it's like those stories are great.
Yeah.
Fun to hear. And the truth is, like, if you've heard him a bunch, well, there's a lot of people that haven't, so
right.
It's always just good to, it's always fun to kind of experience those. And then he's got his book out that came out, I don't know, maybe it's pretty, I want to say it was pretty recently in the last couple of years that I still have to read. And
is it like a biography or like a tell-all?
Yeah, it's got a biography.
It's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, especially for him and all of the things that he's done.
What's weird is that him and his brother are both drummers, like
high-level
drummers. Yeah. And where was that? Is that in Kansas City or was that in Nashville?
Yeah, Kansas City.
Okay. How about Paul Gilbert?
Paul was in Kansas City as well. I got a call from – he was doing Guitar Center clinics here. And I got a call and asked if I wanted to do that. And I was like, well, of course. He's my favorite guitar player of all time. So – and it was one of those weird situations where I was supposed to go visit my ex-wife's family and we were supposed to do some stuff. So I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it. So I was like, I made arrangements and made it work because I wasn't going to pass that up.
Yeah.
And we had 2 days to learn like 8 songs. And I don't know why it was so last minute. I think maybe it was Paul saying, hey, I want to use a real band. And maybe Guitar Center thought he was going to just come in with tracks like a lot of guitar players do.
Mm.
And so I'm glad they called me. And again, it was one of those things where at the time I was playing in this 90s band and we're playing everywhere. Me and my drummer, his name is Gogo Ray, that I'm actually staying at his house right now. We played together for so long. We were just known as a really tight rhythm section. And so when they asked, they actually asked for me and for him. And when I called him, he was actually kind of like, he's kind of funny about doing last minute stuff because he's such a perfectionist or whatever. You're like, I don't know if I want to do it. And I was like, man, just do it because I don't want to play this with anybody else. And so he got it together. I got it together. I spent two days on this farmhouse with earbuds and my guitar or my bass just trying to learn these songs. And it was cool because he was all over the place. We played a Johnny Cash song, and then we played a Aerosmith song, like deep cut Aerosmith song. We did I can't remember. Lord of the Thighs.
That is a deep cut.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Great song.
And we did What You're Doing by Rush.
Wow, those are all deep cuts.
it was cool. And then we had to do it was a Muddy Water song that we covered. So we could kind of like, the whole point was to musically describe all these different genres and styles and stuff.
Totally get it. Was it, you know, him being one of your idols, was it a good experience as you expected?
Man, it was amazing. He was the nicest guy ever. And he sounded like I do right now. He had a cold, so he sang everything like an octave lower. But man, it was one of those kind of things where I was just like, every time I see Paul anywhere or hear him, whether it's on the internet or on video or just at a show or whatever, I can't stop smiling because not only was that experience with him so great, but he's just such an incredible player. And it's just, I love watching him play and listening to him do his thing.
That's cool. Because, sometimes they say, be careful. You never want to meet something. I don't know the expression, but you don't want to meet your idols or something like that.
Yeah. And that, trust me, I'm not going to go into details, but
sure.
I've worked with a couple of those and had that experience, and it's extremely disappointing when it happens. But then, then you got a guy like George Lynch or some of these other people, like the singer from Buck Cherry.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's like, man, that guy's a raging asshole. Like, you don't want to, whatever. And both of those people have been really nice to me.
Yeah.
So you just never know, what kind of experience. Everybody's different, and every day is different.
Right.
And every scenario is different. So, one person may have had a bad situation or a bad experience. Doesn't mean that that person is necessarily, sometimes it does. There are definitely people that I've met over several occasions that I'm like, okay, that's just how that person is, and that's not cool. some friends of mine had an experience with one of the former Eagles recently and played with him and said he was terrible to work with. And then he's like, maybe he had a bad day, but they had to play another show with him, and the next day he was exactly the same way. So he was like, well, now I know why he's not in the Eagles.
Yeah, that's
just, sometimes it happens. There's nothing you can do about it.
But, you know, it's weird that that happens because the music business is so small when it comes down to it, and
so small.
Very incestuous in many ways. And like, you know, you'd be really smart to just, like, suck it up and smile even if you're having a shitty day. Or just tell somebody, hey, I apologize, I'm having a bad day or whatever, you know. Because, yeah, that's the worst thing that would have happened. How did you get hooked up with Vixen?
Vixen was... I wasn't expecting that at all. You know, I was kind of going through a drought and trying to figure out what I was going to do. I'd been in Nashville for a little while at that point. And I even remember calling one of my friends and just being like, man, I'm doing all these gigs. I know all these people and nobody's calling me. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Literally, probably 2 weeks later, I get a call from Tony Higbee from Tom Kiefer's band. And saying, hey, man, Cher from Vixen hit me up, and they're looking for a keyboard player. But they have to be able to do tour managing duties as well. Have you done that before? And I had done that with Pomeroy and some other things. So it's like, well, would you be interested? I'm like, of course I'd be interested. I mean, I'd had a crush on all of those girls when I was in eighth grade. I would love to be in a band with them, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, I remember seeing him on Arsenio Hall back in the day and on, like, MTV's, like, live MTV stuff and whatever. It's just, I was a fan. I had the first couple records, and then as I got older, I got the third record. And, you know, so, as you said, Britt and I went down there in February, and it was actually not the new guitar player, or drummer. It was the original drummer and the original bass player, and it's still the original singer, too. They were just looking for a new guitar player, which Brittany was the new guitar player. So we both auditioned at the same time, and it went really well. We went down to Cher's house in Florida and had a blast. And
where in Florida? Where she live?
I can't remember the name of the town. It's outside of Tampa.
Oh, so near here.
Yeah, I can't. It's like one of the, you know, it's a suburb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's about 45 minutes outside or whatever, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, we had a great time. And ate Cher's husband's amazing food. And yeah, we were good. We got the gig, and we've been there ever since, and it's been a great experience. And one of the best things about Vixen is, oddly enough, working with all women, but there's no drama. Everybody gets along, and
that is amazing.
It's easy, and I just show up. We just play our stuff, and then we're done, and that's it. And it's great.
Are you guys? I know you said you're making a live record. When does that tour start?
We start June in Sweden. At the beginning of June, we're doing Sweden Rock, and then which has got a ton of. I mean, the lineup for that is insanely silly.
There's some great stoner rock bands out there, and you know, in Sweden and in the Netherlands and that area in general.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. And then also, like, I mean, one of my favorite bands ever, ABBA. You know, I love all that stuff that mm-hmm. came out. You know, I even liked stuff like, what was it? Like Ace of Base and all that pop stuff that goes out of Sweden is so amazing. But, I mean, but this festival has Iron Maiden and Ozzy and Judas Priest on it. So it's like,
wow.
It's pretty exciting. And Helloween, which I'm super excited about.
That's but an old name I haven't heard in a while.
I love that band. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And then, and like Stone Sour and Meshuggah. It's ridiculous.
That's really cool.
I'm pretty stoked about it.
And are you going to be in Europe out there for a while, or is that just a one-off?
That's a one-off, and then we're doing, like, the Grass Pop Festival in Germany, which is even more insane than Sweden one. It's just like, if you look at the lineup, you're just like, what? How do they put all these bands on this thing? It's ridiculous. And, I mean, it's Guns N' Roses is on that one, and Maiden, and Ozzy and Priest again, and then like Marilyn Manson and Ghost and Megadeth, and then you have guys like you have Limp Bizkit. You know, it's just like and Seether and POD. It's just all over the place.
Those are good bands, though.
Yeah, great stuff. I love it.
That's cool, man. Yeah. Well, enjoy that. I hope you have a good time doing that. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, thanks. I'm excited.
You've been involved in a lot of projects, and you're also really good about doing side hustles. And I was curious, like, so far, what are the top three experiences that you've had musically? And what I mean by that is, which ones left you feeling most satisfied about the work you've done?
Well, one of the coolest things was doing Rockfest in Kansas City with Corey Taylor, because that was kind of like, for rock musicians in Kansas City, it's kind of like the, that's the Holy Grail gig.
Hmm.
And we were on main stage, you know, playing in front of 50,000 people. And that was pretty cool, man. Like, to be able to finally do a gig like that in such a prominent spot in your hometown.
Your hometown, yeah. That's what's cool about it.
So that was a really memorable time for me there, that show. And then, the Monsters of Rock cruise we just did, that was extraordinary, because that was a cruise ship filled with a zillion bands that I grew up listening to, loving, and I literally spent like 8-9 hours a day for the first 3 days watching bands, like just watching music and taking in all of this stuff that I love. And then, you know, the most surreal thing about that, at the end, that last day, it was an artist party, and I'm standing there and looking around going, shit, all of these assholes used to hang on my wall. All these people. It's just weird. And it's like, finally getting to that point where these people are kind of your peers and they're your friends, and some of them of which are my friends, and it's kind of that in itself is really funny. Like, living in Nashville, a lot of musicians there live there, and I've befriended a lot of these guys, and I'm just going over their house eating barbecue and stuff like that. I'm just like, wait a minute, this is weird. I was like, well, I mean, I don't want to name drop and be silly, but one of the guys that I have become really good friends with is Rachel Bullen from Skid Row. And I just go, you know, I almost pierced my nose because of you, because of that fucking chain thing you had when I was, like, back in the day. I just thought that was so cool.
That's funny, man.
Now that your house, like, eating barbecue and chilling out with all these people, it's just kind of surreal, but in a good way, obviously.
It's nice that you could feel like that.
It's really about appreciation and gratitude for what it is. I think that's gets you far in this business for sure.
Well, it's really funny. I've interviewed a lot of people that I've listened to over the years, but the only one that I felt kind of funny with was when I interviewed Dave Mason, because I remember being really young and buying his Alone Together record. And I was thinking, and it was a big influence on me, that record. And I was like, thinking, if someone would have told me, hey, you know, in 40 years, you'll be on the phone with this dude having a conversation. Not that it was a big deal. Yeah. I mean, I'm a guy doing interviews. He talks to plenty of guys like me. I'm not trying to like say I had a significant, but it was a weird thing for me because he was so way back in my memory banks. All right, cool. And what would be the third, number three? You said Rockfest in Kansas City, and then Monsters of Rock Cruise. Was there a third one? And maybe there's not.
I guess if I were to say something, I mean, it seems like silly because I keep talking about these cruises, but we just did the Kiss cruise like in November, and that was ridiculous because, like, my first record that I ever owned was Kiss's Love Gun record. I when I was like 4 years old, I bought the Star Wars soundtrack, Sesame Street Sings, and Kiss's Love Gun album. My grandma bought them for me at Kmart in Greeley, Colorado.
What a diverse selection there.
Yeah, it's stupid. That's which completely defines who I am now, too, because I'm just as, like, schizo with music as I was then.
And Star Wars, Kiss, and Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, man.
And so to come, you know, to be this age and play with guys who play with Gene Simmons and Ace Frehley and who are part of their bands, and then be on this Kiss cruise and spend time hanging out with guys from Extreme who I loved as a kid, and you know, getting to know the Steel Panther guys. I know you had Russ on the show. I mean,
yeah,
it was glorious. I had so much fun. You know, this is before the Monsters cruise, so it was my first experience really just kind of getting dig into like these people and getting to know them, and it's been a really that was the other one, honestly. Like I came out of that, you know, we played Home Sweet Home and had Michael Starr from Steel Panther sing with us, and just those kinds of experiences and moments, you're like, man, this is crazy and really cool. And meeting Gene and talking to those guys and hanging out with Eric Singer. And oh, I don't know. It's just, it's the beginning of this stuff for me, you know, because so it's all new and exciting.
Home Sweet Home, is that Cinderella originally? I can't think.
Motley Crue.
Motley Crue, right. Sorry.
Not no worries.
Yeah. That's a great song.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. No, and I totally get it, man. There's a big component of nostalgia in those things for you. I could see why they're so meaningful.
Yeah.
You're originally from Kansas City. What was your childhood like?
I actually grew up, well, I spent most of my childhood in Greeley, Colorado until 1988. And then I moved to Kansas City in 88, and I was there until 3 years ago. And my childhood was, you know, especially in Colorado, it was great. It was Star Wars figures and, you know, hanging out and riding your bikes all across town. I mean, I went back there recently and I was like, man, I can't believe all the places I actually rode my bike to by myself or with my friends. We went all over the place where there was no way I'd let my kids do that now.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But back then, we just went, we were out all kinds of hours of the day and riding to places and stealing candy and cigarettes and just being assholes. And, you know, it was a, and then I was in Boy Scouts and we had all these, like, experiences there going camping and doing things with my dad. And you know, my parents were awesome growing up. I have no complaints. I was, you know, it's funny too, because I was adopted. So that a lot of times kind of makes people go, well, because you're not your real parents or blah, 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 or whatever. But you know what? These people were my real parents, really, because that's all I knew. And it was awesome. And they, I think they're responsible the way that I grew up for who I am today. And I'm not unhappy with who I am today at all. So.
Yeah, I think that's a short-sighted comment when people say he's not your real parents, because if they mean like the random donation of a sperm.
Right.
I mean, seriously, like, you know, you don't, there's no being a dad is a lot different than, you know, being a father. You know, anybody could become a father. Any 15, 16-year-old can be a father, right? You know, and there's a big difference between that. So I'm not a big proponent of real is, you know, to me is who loved you, who gave you, you know, safety and security. That's your real dad, you know, and that's your real mom, you know, whether it's adoption or just circumstance, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
What kind of work did your dad do?
He was always in computers in some capacity. So, I mean, I guess today, by today's standards, you'd call it IT or whatever.
Sure.
It wasn't called that before. Back then, it was right. All programming and whatever.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot of stuff about, that's why I'm pretty proficient with computers now, is because of being around that as a kid and writing basic programming as, you know, as a 5-year-old and stuff like that. It's, I enjoy it.
Then how did you get into music? How did that come about? Because you were obviously really into it at a young age. How did you get to playing?
My mom says I started playing piano when I was 3. And my parents bought me all this crap, like drum kit and little, like organ and guitars and stuff like that. But I started taking piano lessons, classical lessons, and whatever when I was about first grade. Played that for a while. Then discovered Quiet Riot and Twisted Sister and Motley Crue and decided I want to get a guitar instead. And so I did. And, you know, like I said before, that kind of took over my life for several years until one of my favorite bands in Kansas City needed a keyboard player. And so I ended up, and I wanted that position. I wanted to be in that band.
Hmm.
So I rented a keyboard player from this music store every week for rehearsal because I didn't own one.
Right.
So I'd have to go there and rent it, this old Insonic TS-12. It's like weighs like like an elephant around. Stupid. And you know, go to practice with those guys, and that's how I got in that band. And you know, it was one of those things where I was in a band that I started playing guitar and a little bit of keyboards. That band broke up, and I saw an opportunity for this other band that was kind of on a higher level. If that makes sense. They were playing the cool clubs and blah blah blah, whatever, and more popular than we were. So I wanted that, and that's where I kind of made that transition into that.
Very cool. So was it like once you started playing music, you knew that that's what you wanted to do professionally, or like when did that?
I think I would say that kind of came about right around the time when I got a guitar, and you know, watching, like I said, watching MTV and all those kinds of things.
Hmm.
But honestly, like Purple Rain was a big part of that, and then Motley Crue's "Looks That Kill" video still stands out as like, okay, that's really badass. I want to do that. That's cool. Like Hot Girls and Satan and Pentagrams and all the crap. That like, I don't know. That was, it was appealing because it was dangerous and whatever. And you know, Prince, it speaks for itself. I mean, you watch that movie. It's a hokey movie, but everything about it is amazing. And the performances are electrifying. And you're like, yes, I want to do that. And Apollonia is really hot. And you know, just like, like whatever. It's like, yeah, that guy's amazing. I want to do that. And to this day, he's still like in my top. I mean, I do a show in Kansas City once a year called the Purple Jam. And it's just everybody gets together, all the musicians playing Prince songs all night. It's pretty cool.
That's really cool. How far is that from Nashville?
Long.
Yeah, that's like, what I thought.
Like 9-10 hours away.
Yeah, that's pretty far. It's like going to Tampa. Yeah. Have you had any obstacles to overcome throughout this journey, either personal, music, or business related? Like you mentioned earlier, that you know, you were at a point before you got Vix, and it was sort of a lull. Business wise, have you had any other obstacles?
Well, when I was going through, I was playing with Corey. I met Corey Taylor at one of the worst times of my life, where I was getting ready to get a divorce and everything was like my family is falling apart.
Yeah.
And I spent a year trying to like not play music at all.
Mm.
To try to fix my marriage, and so I didn't play live. I was just teaching, and that got me into teaching music at this music school and whatever, and that was cool. But like the bug of like I gotta get back out and play, and that's how I started playing at the Howl at the Moon and playing doing piano, because I ran into somebody saying, hey, they need somebody down there. And and you know, that was kind of a means to an end at the time, and I didn't think in a million years I'd still be doing it, but it's a pretty lucrative and pretty fun gig. And but that was one of the hardest parts, was just like trying to figure out what I'm going to do and how I'm going to stay in music, or if not, I'm going to keep my family together. And that obviously didn't happen, because now we're divorced. And I moved to Nashville, and I was here in Kansas City right now because I wanted to come here to see my kids for Easter or whatever. But to have that separation from my kids is like really, really not pleasant.
No, and I'm totally good.
I only get to see him like once a month, or if that. I mean, this is the first time this weekend I've seen him since Christmas because of our schedules and just not being able to make it work. And so that's definitely the most difficult thing about all of this.
How old are they?
8 and 13. Yeah. Will be 14 soon. So.
Yeah, that's a tough age, man. I feel for you. I do. I went through a similar thing many, many years ago, so I understand it. And it is very painful, and it's fucked up, and you know, it's hard to have an upside about it, so I get it. Man. Just hang in there. As a guy who's made a living as a musician for, you know, your whole career, basically, if you could go back and give the young Tyson Leslie some advice, what advice would you have given yourself?
Man, as a musician?
As opposed, besides don't get married?
I was going to say, because I like...
Well, just in general, like musically or about life or about anything, what advice do you wish you had when you were younger that you would have liked to give to yourself?
Man, I don't know. Like, the advice that I give to young people now, because I meet lots of them, is just like, just be a cool person, man. Be nice to people along the way, because you will most likely in some way, shape, or form, there's a good chance you may run into them again, and they're going to remember you.
One way or another.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so, and I think that's important. Also, just be grateful for what you have. So, you know, there's a lot of people, and especially in the dueling piano world, that are just whiny, bitchy, like entitled asshole people.
And really?
There's a lot of great people too, but there's a lot of folks that just act like they're the best thing since sliced bread, and they're really not that great. And it's like, man, and they're complaining about the money they make and all that kind of stuff. You know what? I made, like last night, just playing, there was nobody there, it was dead, and I made a lot of money just playing other people's songs for 3 hours. And yeah. It's like, I made a lot more money doing that than most of the guys busting their ass on the weekends, setting up lighting rigs and PA and doing all, and learning all these songs, doing whatever. And those guys, you know, are happy to walk out with. There are the guys on Broadway in Nashville who are extraordinary players. Some of those guys are just, and some of those guys are like guys that play for some of the big guys.
You know,
like. And they're happy to make $150.
Yeah.
And it's like, I make more than that just walking in the building, you know? So yeah. It's like, you gotta put things in perspective and be grateful for what you have. And the other thing is, take a fucking auto class when you're a kid. So you know how to like fix cars when they break down and shit.
Yeah.
Because that shit is expensive. And, you know, Take some of the girly classes so you can hang out with girls. So there was this kid in my high school, and he would take all the like home ec and the dumbest, like the classes that most dudes like would stay far away from. But you know what? That was the smartest guy in the school because he had all the girls.
Yeah, yeah.
All the girls. Like, hey, yeah, that's pretty smart.
There you go. So go back to. I'm gonna really interested to see what you come up with here. Desert Island Discs, your top three discs in no particular order, knowing that it could change tomorrow, just like your knee-jerk reaction right now.
Yeah. Damn, that changes too from time to time. Like, there's times where I'm gonna go like, man, definitely Purple Rain's up there, and. I don't really get tired of that record except for the song Purple Rain. I get a little tired of that one, but the rest of that record is just extraordinary. And then what else would I say? Ramon's Mania, man. I haven't listened to that in a really long time because I did kind of burn myself out on it because I listened to it so much as a young person. Mm. And I was just like, and then God. That third one's really hard because it can be so many things. For whatever reason that just comes to my head without taking all this time to over-prepare, well, a Master of Puppets comes into mind.
Okay. Metallica.
Yeah. But, I mean, at the same time, I'd be like, I just take Frank Zappa's discography because that would just last me forever.
Yeah.
You know, and you could be on that island for so long and be like, man, I still haven't heard half of this stuff yet.
Yeah. Very true, man. Very true.
And find some prolific artist like that that just has put out a ton of material.
Yeah, like John Coltrane or you know.
Yeah, or just Chopin's, like, I don't know, Preludes. It's just enough to keep you going for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah. Hey, if you didn't become a professional musician, what do you think you would have done instead?
I don't know. Like, probably, I don't know. I've thought about that. Like, I've even been asked, like, well, hey, if your hands get cut off or you lose your fingers,
that's extreme.
What are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. What would you do otherwise? I always loved working in movies and film and loved that craft, though. I worked in a movie theater for a long, long time growing up, and I think it's a pretty fascinating world. I think if I didn't have the music appreciation or whatever, I think that'd be something that I think I would enjoy. Because entertainment in general is something I enjoy being around and part of. I always thought it'd be cool to be an extra or just even be. I'm a shitty actor, though, so I'd never be a good actor because I can't memorize anything. Lines, lyrics. I look at my own lyrics when I'm playing my own songs. I can't remember how they go. But,
yeah, but that can't be true because you're playing 3.5 hours last night.
I use my phone to look up lyrics all the time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but memorizing songs.
Yeah, I can memorize songs all day long.
Yeah, yeah.
No problem. Music is not an issue. Music, you can find, you know, the passing tones and remember kind of how they go. But words, forget. No way.
What is your strongest personal quality, in your opinion?
I think at this point, it's my ability to connect with people in a positive way and have a positive influence on, hopefully, on their lives, just kind of after working with me or meeting me or whatever. And that's not to sound like I'm some sort of guru or I'm amazing or anything, but my whole purpose in life for me is just, I come from the side of, hey, what can I do for you? And how can I help you get better at what you're doing or who you are or whatever? For example, I worked with this kid last night I'd never worked with in my life or met. He's pretty new to the piano game. And I spent, you know, a good half hour afterwards just kind of explaining and trying to help him out and help him understand how it all works. A lot of times I just like bringing people together and like the Rare Hair Jam and the Purple Jam and all the jams we're involved in Nashville. The biggest reward about it, we don't make money off of it. They're always charity gigs. We're always taking that money and putting it towards something else. But the best thing I get out of it is just watching all these people from different walks of life come together, get to know each other, play with each other on stage. A lot of times they've never met before and come out with new relationships and new, I don't know, just happiness, you know. That's it. That's
all I care about. Your thing is passing along good vibes.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's fucking awesome. I mean, it is. What, you know, what you can't find a downside to that, you know? What are you going to say?
Right.
You know, oh, that's horrible. That's horrible. The world doesn't need that. Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Like, I'm still a big moviegoer. I'm still into that a lot. I just saw a couple with my kid this week. Parenting, obviously.
Yeah, well, you don't have a choice.
Yeah, and that one, like, I've got a little 3-year-old that lives with me, too. And all of that, honestly, like, when I'm not doing music, it's pretty much that. I'm family and trying to make that work and be successful at that is important to me. So it's hard, man.
You have to do, for me anyway, I found that my kids are older now, but you had to really, that doesn't just happen. It's like playing your music. You don't just like, you're not just good. You really got to work at it. And I found that for having a family, you really got to work at that shit.
And I don't like, when I'm not playing music, that's pretty much all I'm doing. I'm not really doing a whole lot of other things. And when I do, it's still musically related in some way, shape, or form. Like I'm organizing one of the jams, or I'm making charts for songs, or, you know, it's so much of my life revolves completely around music in some way, shape, or form. I don't really have a lot of time to do other hobby things. And I'm not into sports and into that kind of stuff. Like I wish I was sometimes, but, and I don't drink, and I'm not a big partier or go out and do all that kind of stuff. So if I'm going out, it's usually to watch somebody else, another band or whatever.
Sure, sure. What's a favorite part of what you do and the least favorite?
Well, I guess my favorite part is just the performance and the stuff I just spoke about, of like working with other people, getting to know other people. And, you know, I would say I'm kind of introverted here, but when it comes to the music part and the music side, I'm a lot more extroverted. And
wow, you know what? A lot of people tell me they're introverted. I'm surprised to hear that, man. You were talking. We had good conversations. This is the first time I talked to you, man. You weren't. You know, sometimes I gotta like. You know, I could tell when someone's shy, or you know, it's a push that I have to do. But you're really. I thought you were pretty outgoing.
I got to turn it on.
Yeah, well, I thought you were super outgoing, actually. That's interesting.
Yeah, but like, it's, I don't know, we'll get to a family gathering or something like that, or I'll go to, I remember back in the Pomeroy days, we went to this party or this whatever, and I'm like the guy, I was like the guy, the kid in the snowball couples and glued to the wall going, don't talk to me, leave me alone, you know?
Yeah.
If I don't know what to talk to you about, or if I don't know that we have a common something to roll with, and I don't really know how to start, so I'll just be like, well, all right, here we are. That's it. But if I know, like for instance with you, I mean, I had an instant connection with the guitar stuff, and I knew what to talk to you about.
Yeah, okay, there was no searching. Yeah, it was very easy. Yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah, I get it. I get it. Yeah, that makes total sense. Is there anything you're trying to improve on, either musically, personally, business, or anything else?
Man, I'm always trying to improve on all of it, all that stuff. There's never a perfect way. You're never done learning and getting better. I'm always working on, everybody still makes mistakes and messes up and does stuff wrong. And there's always, you're going to learn from all that stuff in some way or another. So, yeah, I mean, all of it.
I'm with you 100%. Who's had the biggest influence on your life?
You know what's weird is, like, aside from my parents, which is kind of given for most people, I guess, not everybody, but there's a guy, and it's so silly, but I worked with this guy, his name is Chris Muir, and I was working at a music store. It was when Blockbuster had music stores for 5 minutes. And he was my manager, my general manager, and his way of managing people is how I manage people now. It's like everything that he did is basically my philosophy on all of this, all this stuff, is like you want to be such a good person that people want to work with you and for you. They can't wait to come to work, or they can't wait to work with you in some capacity because it's exciting or it's fun or they get something out of it. And that's how I felt every time I went to work working for that guy. And so I was like, man, that's the way to do it. And I still try to achieve that every day.
Interesting. What was he doing? Because I'm interested in that. I'm always trying to learn how to be better at stuff like that. What was he doing?
He was just laid back. He never got mad. And he's not yelling at people, barking orders at people. He lets you do your thing and be who you are. And if you need to fix something or it's a problem, then, you know, he'll guide you in a way to, okay, well, you might think about doing this differently because this ain't working. And it was just fun. And it wasn't all about ego stuff. And that's, you know, music, there's a lot of ego involved. I mean, a lot of us get involved in it because, hey, look at me, I can play this thing and I can do this and whatever. And, but like, it doesn't have to be once you're off stage. And I think a lot of people need to realize that when you're on stage, then yeah, that's your time to shine and do your thing. But when you're off, like, just be cool.
Yeah. Well, so you basically, he had a certain vibe about him, and you've tried to approach, whether you're doing musical director stuff like you are now or for Vixen or any kind of stuff, you try to have that same vibe?
Yes, definitely.
That's great, man. Hey, two more questions. What is your definition of happiness, Tyson?
I think just happiness to me is the people you keep in your company and you surround yourself with, and because they kind of define your daily life. So if you got a bunch of miserable, shitty people around you all the time, you're probably going to be that same way. And I've learned definitely to weed out and how to kind of keep the company that I want to keep. And that doesn't mean that I'm not going to be nice to somebody that I think is maybe not somebody I want to hang with all the time, because I will be, but I will just kind of keep them at an arm's distance and know how to engage with them differently than people that I want to have in my daily day to day. And those are the things that make me happy, is just, a strong family, strong, career. But I think the career comes as a result of how you work with other people. Again, it just comes down to that interaction and that unseen force of, I'm not a big religious guy, so I'm not really into that so much, but I appreciate what it is for other folks.
Sure.
But I don't, for me, the force and the and the all that stuff is just the interactions you have on day-to-day life with the people that are most important to you.
That's cool. I like that definition very much. Last question, man. What's been the biggest change in your personality, you think, over the last 10 years, and how much of that change was deliberate and how much is just a natural part of aging?
As I get older, I try not to be as hard on myself about things, and realize that I was pretty hard on myself, you know, I'd say even around 10 years ago when everything was starting to kind of go to shit in my life.
Yeah, sure.
And, forgiveness and forgiveness of self, patience with yourself and with other people. And just knowing, like, you still got plenty of room to grow, unless I get hit by a bus or some shit. Like, I still got a lot of time to make things happen and continue influencing other people in a positive way, and just trying to be a better person all the time.
Yeah, man.
A better musician and all that kind of stuff.
I agree with you on that. Like, don't rush that that kind of thing, man. It makes your life a lot less, you know, just be more, you know, accepting that shit happens when it's supposed to happen, kind of.
Yeah, I've always been that. Like, I don't know. Like my bass guitar got stolen, or actually just a couple of weeks ago, a guy busted out a window in my car, and
holy shit!
You know, when I came out of work, and I was like, man, my car looks weird. I realized that the glass was gone, and there was a big dent in it, you know. But it's like, I'm not going to sit there and scream and throw a tantrum and have a cow,
right?
Because like that's not how to help anybody. It's not going to accomplish anything. There's no point in like making a big scene about it.
Yep.
Just kind of look at it and go, well, shit. All right. Well, it's going to be a little colder driving home today. You know, that's it. And then I get it fixed the next day and move on. I mean, it's just those kinds of things.
Yeah, I hear you. A lot of that has to do coping skills too. You're used to doing stuff so many times. It's like, you know, your coping skills with shit gets a little better. At least for me, it has.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, man, I can't thank you enough for your time. I want to just tell people
where
they could find you. You're very welcome. First of all, check out Tyson on his website, TysonLeslie.com. He's got all his independent albums there, and it's a cool site. Talk about Dew Pendleton. Tyson's producing a country artist. His name is Dew, D-E-W, Pendleton, P-E-N-D, is it D-L-E? Or, yeah, Dew, D-E-W, P-E-N-D-L-E-T-O-N, and tell me about that.
Man, Dew's one of those teddy bear guys that has this, you know, when you heard Chris Stapleton's voice for the first time, you're like, damn, and he's got one of those voices. He's got one of those that's just like, okay, this undeniable good. And then to top that off with these ridiculously well-written songs, I have no doubt that that guy is destined for some good things in the next couple of years, for sure. It's just the music is too good, and the vocal and the delivery are really, really, really good. And the songs are just, they're right up there with everything else that's going on. And they're not too old school, but they're not like bro country and silly and cheesy either. They're just really good tunes. So I'm excited to see how people react to them.
How did you connect with him, and how'd you wind up being his producer?
I work with him at the piano bar, actually.
Oh, and, shit.
And he was working there, and we just started this process about around January of last year, where he was bringing over his songs to my house and recording them with just playing the piano and singing, and then I'd go through and arrange them, and I was like, man, I really want to get this done. I want to do this and make this happen for you, because I believe in the music. Like, it's, I just think it's going to be, it could do something.
And what a great lesson on, you know, talk about not being a dick, how important it is. You never know. And if I know you from after this interview, he was one of the guys that you probably were helping out in the piano bar and moving him along. And all of a sudden, little did you know, you'd be producing his record.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's good, man. I'm glad. I wish you a lot of luck with that. Everybody, check out Dew Pendleton and see what's going on with him. You can find Tyson on social media at Facebook. He's on Tyson Leslie Music, and it's T-Y-S-O-N-L-E-S-L-I-E Music. And on Instagram and on Twitter, he's at Tyson Leslie. Any final words of wisdom, man?
No, man. Just thanks for having me and taking an interest in anything that I'm always appreciative of anybody that takes interest in anything that I'm doing. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time, man. And you've been awesome. And like I said, everybody's just so, everybody speaks so highly of you, and you know, that nice guy thing that you're doing is working, man. So, and I know it's genuine. So, thanks, man. Thank you for your time. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Go check out Tyson on the road with Vixen too. He's the the only guy in the band. So
right.
If you want to meet the gals, he's the guy you got to be nice to. And thanks again to Tyson Leslie for spending time with us. I really appreciate it. Go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with early product announcements and discounts. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice. So choose wisely. Be nice. Yeah, right? Go play your guitar and have some fun. Or your bass and your keyboards and have some fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.